speaking to him. Deputy President was one day telling us, coming with us, matter of fact, the department, at the strategic meeting, the DG, as he was presenting, started walking and he stopped. Stopped. That silence. And he waited, he stood there and he waited. And he said, after the late come and took the seat, he said, we want to apologize that we started before you. He just wanted to make the late come and see. And what I like about the CD is that discipline is the utmost in this part of Manoeuvre. Even when it was DNE, a very disciplined man. but we understand you took a late flight this morning. 6 o'clock. Traffic in Cape Town is a bit bad, so for those that come from Northwest and Mpumalanga and Popo and the Free State, Gauteng is also a bit of bad traffic, KZN is also a bit of bad traffic, but for those other provinces, traffic in Cape Town is a bit bad. So your apologies accepted, but for the parliamentary staff, I don't think there's a... I'm not going to even ask you to apologize. Just in case you remember that we like to start on time. Colleagues, unfortunately, we were scheduled for the whole day, but we have to leave at around about 2:30. We have to finish at 2:30 because we've got a 3 o'clock meeting for chairpersons and whips in the Parliament, which is being called by the chief whip of the majority party. If the majority party members know that's the boss of Parliament. So we have to attend that. So if possible, we would like to wrap up everything. If it could be by lunchtime, otherwise we'll have a shorter lunch and come back and wrap up. If that carries the approval of the committee. You can still sit here by 3, but I'm leaving for Parliament. So, welcome everybody. I think we're going to... we're waiting for the documents.
Yeah.
They're still behind. The person walks behind. So, should we carry on or not?
I propose that we carry on.
So there is the thing on, you know, we can carry on.
Yes,
we're going to catch up with time.
Yeah. Everybody knows everybody. Before I proceed, I want to welcome our research. The committee has now been, research has been deployed to the committee. You can name and shame, or just name yourself, or use the same part. Raji has been the research of trade and industry before, but now he's moved from trade and industry to economic development. So Raji is our researcher. And from outside Raji, the committee side, this is quite a vibrant committee. You see, we've got the youth league, we've got the women's league. Unfortunately, we haven't got the veterans league here, and we've got the opposition committee here, and that. But this is quite a vibrant committee, you know. As you've seen, Malema Militant just wait till you hear from his mind. He's more than Malema. So, but welcome, and all the best. I don't know who you should call it next to you.
Most definitely, also, that is special for the committee
on the mineral resources. Okay. All right, okay. Mr. Grace, welcome. Grace is our committee secretary. Mr. Mislomi, welcome. I don't know why I'm in this sisterhood this morning, but Honorable Gamere, Honorable Chen, Honorable Nguli, Honorable Nyambe, Honorable Dikali, Mr. Dikali, Honorable Mai, Mr. McLaughlin from Sabinet, welcome there. Dr. Conroy, from the Office of the Chief, welcome. and the PDG, you can blame yourself, you need to save practice. Welcome to the meeting. My name is Trey Adams. I've been deployed as chairperson of the Committee on Economic Development, which comprises of Economic Development, Department of Economic Development, Department of Mineral Resources, and Department of Energy. Now, Chief Director, are you now with as Mineral Resources and not mining anymore? The department has changed the name to Mineral Resources, not mining. So, yeah, members, are there any?
I hear movement behind me. Why don't you? You ask.
I'm Quentin Cadis from PMG.
Who?
I'm Quentin Cadis from
Quentin.
From PMG.
Quentin Cadis?
Yes.
Okay. Cadis?
Yeah.
Oh, Quentin, welcome.
Thank you.
And
I'm
very skeptical about people sitting behind us, so why don't you grab the chair there, Quentin?
Thank you.
We part of the team. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the department for coming to meet us in the mining chart. Of course, we come to the director, I think this is probably an oversight, but you know, like I said, we go back and come to select committee on economic development on another day. This will probably be an oversight select committee on finance.
The charter was developed in response to a call that was made in the MPRBA, section 102A to be specific, which called for the minister to develop a mining charter as well as also to develop the housing living standards, which we have developed and published in the government address. The charter was developed, and the intention really with the charter was that the charter would be an implementation tool or implementation strategy specifically focusing on transformation as it is discussed in the MPRCA. And if I may just take a few steps back and give a brief background, that it all started with the White Paper of 1998, which was for us, sort of a transitional document, a transitional policy coalition moving from the old Minerals Act to the MPRCA. that introducing a lot of changes into the whole regime of how we regulated the mining industry back then. I'm sure honorable members know that back then, in the middle of AIDS, there was no mention, I don't even want to say emphasis, there was no mention of broad-based participation. The actual ownership framework, if I may say, of mineral wealth was such that minerals were either privately owned by certain individuals or they were owned by the state. And this then policy brought in that change where it said the mineral wealth of the country belongs to all the citizens and the state will be the custodian. And that is also espoused very clearly in Section 2 of the NPRCA. So as these transformational issues were brought about, we then needed to develop instruments that would assist us to implement transformation as we espoused it in the policy as well as in the NPRCA. Hence then the development of the mining charter. I must say from the onset that the mining charter was a negotiated document, very thoroughly consulted with different stakeholders, and it was signed among all stakeholders. And stakeholders included the department, the union, organized business, SAMDA, Chamber of Mines, etc., etc. And all the parties signed the charter. And one of the things that I would just like to highlight at this point that happened is that when all the members signed the charter, there is a clause in the charter that says it will be reviewed in 5 years just to check as to the progress and whether there are changes that are necessary at that given point. And I must say that that time is actually now 2009. I'll come to that later on. I've spoken to issues of inequalities previously, where the ownership, as it was back then, was along the red line, less people didn't have the access, and there were even laws prior to this, like the gold law, which specifically precluded women from being in the mine. So women were completely barred from having anything to do with mining. So this was all in that transformation. This is all in that transformation agenda that I spoke to earlier on. And one of the points that we thought we would just highlight is that the mining charter is an operational policy document. In the main, was attempting to abet the status quo then, where historically disadvantaged individuals were just considered to be repository for cheap labor and economic exploitation. There were no benefits to them, community issues were not taken up where you find it. And unfortunately, mining happens in rural areas, and those people stay there. All that they would benefit from those mining operations is the noise and the dust and all the chaos, the water pollution that would happen around them, and they would have nothing to benefit from that. And the charter sought to look into those issues. Just by way of also looking at other related, I won't go through them, I won't mention them one by one, but obviously the Broad-Based Economic Empowerment Act is very much linked to the charter because it talks to issues of participation by broad-based groups in different sectors. The NPRCA, as I've referred to it, Skills Development Act. I will explain how Skills Development Act fits in. Employment Equity Act and the others. I will talk to these ones that I'm mentioning specifically because there are specific elements in the charter that talk to the Skills Development Act and Employment Equity Act. The way the charter is structured, it is structured such that it's framed within six elements. I spoke earlier on to issues of ownership, where previously HDFA did not have access to the industry. So the third element, which is ownership, is I guess the very famous one, or the commonly referred to as greedy, where the charter says it actually spells out the ownership model to encourage broad-based economic and participation in the sector. The charter talks of joint ventures, it talks of HDFA owned companies, which is 50+1. It also talks of employee share option schemes, which we refer to for short as ESOP, where when companies lost applications with us for mining rights, or those that had old order mining rights and they lost rights for conversion, it is the first requirement that they should have that broad-based economic empowerment part. And then we zoom into it to see as to what type of it is. I'll then dwell a bit into the actual structure of how we look at the structuring of the deal. The structure sets targets insofar as ownership or broad-based economic empowerment participation is concerned. The first target was that we said in the charter by 2009 there should be at least 15% ownership by HDFA. So what happened is over the past 5 years, from 2004 when the act was promulgated to date, whenever a company lost an application, we would look at that aspect. If it's anything less than 15%, we would want to see something in their documentation indicating that by 2009 there would be 18%. Or we just look, we find that there is a 15%, which they say, and then we go into the document and interrogate. But the second target that also comes out very clearly in the Act is that by 2014, we want to see a 26% minimum. So we're not there yet, but the target is very close then. I must say though that most of the companies here from the onset come to us and present deals that have been structured such that they in by 26%. And in the 26% you find that they also built in the eco pact, the employee share option scheme, where employees of the company also get a stake of the 26%. It's not that an ESOP has to be a 26% on its own, but which is a different question actually that we get, that does the ESOP have to be 26% on its own, or it can be a mixture of private business investors, communities, business people, local business, women's groups, youth groups, whatever, to make up this. Find that it's a consortium to make up that 26%. And the second element of the charter was management. We felt that we had to focus on management issues where there would be skills transfers. That's why I was referring to those acts earlier on, the Skills Development Act and Employment Equity Act, where you find that the history of our country is the fact that you find that there aren't black managers in the mining sector. So we said there must be at least 40% by 2009 of HDFA in management in the mining industry. And of that, at least 10% must be women. Those are just the targets as we speak. Skills development is also one aspect that we look at, because you find that there was never one skills transfer, there was never any training, and the charter made certain targets that by a certain time we need to see how many learnerships we have in the mining industry, and we are in constant contact with the MPA insofar as the numbers and figures are concerned. But the challenge, I must say, is that not all companies will be registered with MPA. You find that smaller companies wouldn't be registered with MPA, and only bigger, like medium-sized to big companies, are registered with MPA. So the numbers we get, we also have to go to individual companies in case of small companies to get their numbers. But that is built into another implementation tool which we have, which we call a social and labor plan. A social and labor plan is the one document that then zooms in to the issue of skills development, where they start even from agents. Because in the charter we said every employer or a mining company should undertake at least to ensure that their employees are able to give advice at a certain point, and then take them through learnerships and so forth and so forth, so that post mining they are employable somewhere else. And that is monitored. That is monitored and evaluated through the use of the social and labor plan. We have social and labor plan officers who go out and conduct inspections at the mine on an ongoing basis. And from time to time, we have what we call startup compliance inspections, where we look at these elements of the charter in detail through the social and labor plan tool. And then moving to employment equity, I spoke to the targets that we have. Procurement. Just below the ownership model in the charter, there is this element of procurement. And the charter distinguishes between the different levels of procurement, where you find that there is a consumable, which is your water, like bottled water supply, tea and coffee supply, your basic. And you have capital goods, which is your equipment, plant and equipment. And thirdly, you have services, where either maintenance services, cleaning services, or whatever, as mining site. And whenever we do charter compliance inspection, we go into each of the levels and see what is your procurement spend on consumables, what is the procurement particularly allocated to HBSA, what is your procurement spend on HBSA on capital goods as well as services. And that again we do through our charter compliance inspection. And then lastly, we have what we refer to as world development or local economic development. There, the idea is to ensure that companies establish business enterprises for the community in which they operate. For example, the way they would be effective, we always encourage companies, whenever we workshop them, to go and consult first with the municipalities so that there isn't a duplication where they end up doing something that the municipality has already included in their ICT. So whenever they are to compile a social and labor plan, their first point of reference would be the ICT of that particular area. And then they go and consult in the community where they speak with the community and then agree on projects that these are the needs of this area. These are the projects that the municipality is doing, these are the projects that the municipality isn't doing, and then they do that, like those companies that we have. These are the projects, and these are the projects to be implemented by the mining company, and these will be done by a particular municipality. As I indicated, just that last bullet refers to the target and time frames that we're looking at. At the moment, we're looking at our first target was 2009, there will be certain things in place. 2014, there will be certain things in place. As we speak, as I indicated earlier on, we have appointed an independent, an independent consulting company that is doing the assessment and the review of the charter, which is basically looking at the targets that we set in the charter 5 years ago. Have they been met? Do we have, are we at 15% ownership? Do we have projects happening in the communities where mining takes place? As well as, because when it comes to, let me go back a bit, on rural development, we don't only focus on communities where the mine is, which we usually refer to as host communities. We also say they should be targeted in their labor setting area. For example, in Joburg, we find that, like the big gold mines, they don't necessarily have communities. We see the Joburg setup. They don't have their surrounding communities where they are mining. So in such cases, we say they must invest in their labor setting area. And how we determine that? We take their whole role of employees and see where do they come from. And you find that most of them come from the Eastern Cape and Cape West. And then we sit with them and agree on where in Eastern Cape, where in Cape West, and they can go and do some projects. I know with Impala Platinum, we started recently in the Eastern Cape. They developed such a big project on essential oil, and the project is just ready to start off. And others are also coming up in other different areas, but that's just the one aspect. There have been cases where there are also employees from outside the country, like some companies have quite a significant number of people coming from Mozambique. And that's just an issue, one issue which we've been debating internally, that we say in labor sending areas, but in cases where you have people coming from another country, quite a number, how do we deal with that, how do we handle it? But that aspect is definitely covered in the country. So as I was saying, we're still conducting that review. As we indicated before, that our time frame is we are targeting end of October. The charter was signed in October, that's right. So our 5 year time frame for review is October. So we're targeting end of this month. That will mean we would have completed the review, and we will then have the report ready for the minister, and so it shall be taken through the relevant channel and communicated accordingly as to what is the outcome of the assessment. While we have appointed consultants, we are also in-house doing our own review based on experience, because over the past 5 years, I mean, when the MPRDA was promulgated in 2004, it was everything new to all of us. It was, even in terms of application processes, you know, with the old Act, like the Minerals Act, there was no even a system that kept us, the actual mining areas in a GIS system, you know. So we had to implement all those systems. So we said to ourselves, much as we've appointed consultants, let's also do an assessment in-house to say what has been our own experiences as the official of the department over the past 5 years, so that we are able to then reflect and then go back to the minister and say, Minister, over the past five years, this is where we know for sure that we've made progress. These are the areas that we think we still need to strengthen, or these are the areas that we think should be changed or should be changed. We need to amend the law to strengthen or tighten the rules. But that's the purpose of that whole exercise which we are currently undertaking. As I indicated, that the assessment is underway. The company by now has, I think they completed data collection, it's now verification, and working towards the compilation of the assessment report. One thing which is in the pipeline within the department is that we all know that we need investment, and you know that whenever you we review a law or a policy document, investors do tend to say to this, you know, the first thing they think is that you are now making it difficult for them to access the market. So in trying to respond or in trying to be just to ensure the investor confidence in South Africa, particularly in the mining sector, we're planning that the minister will have a roadshow, you know, just to ensure our investors it's not necessarily that the idea is to make it difficult for them. Much as there are issues, very critical investment issues of development and transformation of the country, but the idea would never be to stay investors away and to make their life difficult. So that's one thing that we're hoping we'll be able to advise our minister and assist them to go through this in a very constructive way. And really, as I'm saying, it's just a review, an assessment to take stock of what we've done over the past 5 years and strengthen if there are areas that need to be strengthened, or as they say, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. And if it ain't broken, then we really fix it. But it's that type of a situation that we are in. Just by way of recommendations from our own now experience, Section 28.2.3 of the MPRPA and Section 29 places emphasis on reporting by mining companies. So what we're saying here is that we have been conducting inspections, as I mentioned earlier on, normal daily inspections as well as charter compliance inspections. But we're saying to ourselves, we know that we need to place more emphasis on companies submitting information, even outside us going there for inspection. Companies do submit, but we say we need to step that up a bit and have more reporting. One of the issues which is picked up, which I know questions have been raised on that, is the issue of fronting, where you find what was demanded is the 49% shareholder in a company, so it's a 51% shareholder. But if you go behind that, you then find that, oh no, the woman is at the front. You know, we are saying that that's one of the things that we're looking at critically as we do the review. And we're putting our heads together, as indicated before, that we're saying if it needs amending the law, deciding the school, so we need. If it doesn't need that, it needs to be done by way of regulations or just reaching up the charter a little bit, so we'll do that. One of the things that we've also looked at is the funding model. The feedback that we've been getting over the past, let me say 3 years, as people were asking for conversion, is the difficulty insofar as funding models are structured, where you find that funding models are such that you have an application with a life of mine of 20 years, and the funding model is such that it's a debt payable maybe even 10 years, and that's too long a time. We're saying we need to look into that, you know, maybe something we need to do within the charter where we work on different funding models, financial models, and describe a model or models in the charter, so that it's not that open-ended and it needs difficulty, you know, for our people to access the industry as we intend it. That last point very much related to the exercise that we're doing as we're doing the assessment or the review, where we're saying that we need to go back in terms of what we're doing, we're going back, taking stock, saying are the terms of reference that we had 5 years ago still relevant? Because I'm sure members would know that the climate, both economically, environmentally, socially, politically, wasn't the same as it is today. So we say the terms of reference we had then, are they still relevant? Do we need to change them all together? What is the solution that we need to take? And that's the process that they should be currently facing. Well, yeah. We're just saying socio-economic gain from the mining sector achieved through the mining sector will serve as the basis for the benefit of all South Africans of the very few states in which the well, yeah, I think it's self-explanatory. Slowly, slowly we get there. Slowly, slowly we get there.
Thank you very much for 2 days.
I can take about 2 minutes to get it.
We don't have the kind of money that is needed in mining.
that has been established in this
and the ones that are from the standard of those two on the table.
In some tests, always going to get the book. I did the kind of
the new way to overcome the difficulty that is the tragedy and the fight on the thing because it's true, don't you have to ask him. Right from the presentation, this woman, that you were very clear about the background and the reasons why we had this charge. Simply because the mining sector in the past appreciated the inequality. So, only one question. Is it in relation to the one of compression, but in a different way? Don't you think if you outsource this function of checking the compliance, it's possible for the consultant to collude with the mining company, and that might distort the reality of the company, because they are going to they are going to check the extent to which companies are complying. And should it happen that, because we are talking about the very serious industry, we are talking about big factors, should it happen that the consultants can collude with the very same companies, they are going to give you a wrong picture of the region of London. Even though you might say you can't have that capacity to do it as a department, but at the very same time, all the points that they are raising when checking the recommendations are very relevant points trying to deal with the challenges on the ground. And if that is going to be done by consultants, I don't think it can give us a real picture. That's my one point. I strongly feel that if you can do a little bit of elaboration about consultants collision with the company.
My view of this consultant is so different from honesty and how accurate of the consultant is. It's very interesting to hear yourself. It's always before it comes to the table, and you can do the comparison. It's way more difficult. You can introduce the person in the consultant. In that way, we don't need to know the situation. And also on this piece to know, on an object of action, we try to monitor our country, but we also need to be to secure the investment of our company. I know this is something that can be a little bit of a challenge in the government. So I just want to know, do we have some kind of strategy to deal with the country?
On the everyone question, everyone question, I would like you to clarify for us. Zero the funding in order to
get
the ACFA to expect the community. Can you just clarify what you mean in this recommendation? To zero the funding model. Can you just clarify this to us exactly what you mean? Why can ask I understand it to be taking compliance and yourself internally are doing it yourself and then you're doing 50% more. If you can check, if this is a problem, not the church. Not an arrangement. Madame made the point of hearing that. Now I have a particular interest because I'm having people. What would be in your view now, in terms of, as you said, that things are not as they were before? Now you made a point of very that of not telling that stuff. I want to get you from you to sit there for the, what is it that you think of you had in that stuff now? I don't want to conclude that it is informed of something. But what would there in that as an entity of the country? I'm in a campaign of some sort, but maybe if you can tell us what is there in that one. Thank you.
Your first question on the number of rights issues today, I would be lying to you sitting here and I'll throw your finger in the door. Because as I'm speaking to you, rights are being granted, rights are being issued. We came here prepared just to talk to you on the track, not on licensing, that's a licensing issue. We fought as a member of the community, not member of the committee where I am. But I can't. I don't have the figures like that, I'll be lying if I was to throw a figure out. And then you posed a question linked to that, to say, you expected us to be telling you how many ACSAs have been successful. Because you know that this kind of funding model and you actually said you were going to. I must say that this assessment that you're doing is meant to do it back to that. This is the one aspect that you're looking at. Where we say, mine X signed off a deal with a broad-based group. What's the nature of that deal? How was the funding, the financing model structured? That also did something different. Mine, so and so. That's what we're doing with the assessment. But while I'm saying that, I must say that in a certain sense, there are companies who have done so well actually and went for what we call vendor financing, where the actual company takes the risk on behalf of their broad-based community common partners. And the debt that they pay to the company, not to a bank, at crazy rates, at crazy interest rates and so forth and so forth. There have been, things which the department has facilitated to say, feeling as you are a big company, can't you go for vendor financing for this community? Surely you understand, this is a community, they don't have collateral, they can't access funding from the bank, but what I want to emphasize is that we should be careful of not sort of preempting the outcome of the assessment. Because the assessment is going to look exactly at that. And then at the end of the assessment, at the end of October, then we will know that these are the models that because what happens is, as I said, that the MPRDA was a completely new regulatory regime. And for this regime of a policy that we have created, we have to put in place systems and tools, implementation tools. And the charter was one of the tools. So now we are saying, is this charter relevant? Is this charter, is this instrument the correct tool to implement this? Because it's something completely new in South Africa, it's different from the previous regime. So that is why we are assessing over the past 5 years what is happening. I think your second question is also similar. How far are we with taking funding? That's going to come out in the assessment report. Because then, as they are doing the assessment, they take the shareholders' agreement, scrutinize them into detail, drill down into them. For example, if we get an application where the company says, it's us, the company, and a consortium comprising of different groups, they then drill down to see there's a community chart, there's a women's group, there's so and so, there's another chart with a certain name. They drill down to check who's behind this group within this big
consortium. Thank you very much.
And that's what we actually will be with by the time we complete the assessment. You also spoke about the point on the thriving industry within the free market forces. It's not that we're letting free market forces dictate. It is a question of saying, let's be realistic. We are in this. The markets are such that they are the way they are. We have a giant stock exchange where you can't control who buys, who sells, when. If you have shares in a Xero, which is a listed company, you decide to sell your shares today, it's a free market. You sell your shares. If you want to buy, you buy. You know? So we're saying that part, much as you realize that it is there, but you still want to build investor confidence, you know, within that type of an economic environment. And then moving to Honorable Kamete, you raised the question about employability of people post-mining. Maybe I didn't explain this interview. So what we also emphasize with skills development is that people should be given portable skills. I understand a question of a person who's worked there, my father hasn't worked there for 40 years. Obviously, he retired after that. But I'm talking about a 29-year-old who worked there for 10 years. At the age of 39, the life of mine comes to an end. That person still needs to work for his children. So we're saying by that time, that person must have portable skills so that he can go and work somewhere else. And we don't just talk skills. There is a section within the social and labor chain where we even actually look at salaries. And I must say, mining companies have done very well with that. Where we're promoting skills like for them to take children to varsity on mining related qualifications. We have mining engineers, we have geologists, we have metallurgists, we have the different spectrum, the finance. There are children who are doing their BCom in different areas, but that is closely monitored. We don't only focus on just, you know, transferring skills and this type of thing. We say portable skills as well as degrees and diplomas, others are doing diplomas. And this applies to both the staff employed by the mining company as well as children from their surrounding areas. I'm sure you would know, Dr. Mendez, that in DMR we have for the past 10 years had what we call learner focus week, where in the first half of the year we do, when we were still DME, we would do the mining one, and the second half of the year we would do the energy one, where we try and take learners from what is standard 8th grade 10. And we continue with them the following years until they are in matric, where we streamline them and funnel them to this career. And by the time they get to matric, and while they are there with us during that winter school, we get tutors who assist them with their lesson time, so that by the time they get to matric, they have good results. And then we take them and say, somebody does their time to put them in a university. That's how intense these programs are. It's not just wishy-washy. And we've actually even formed specific partnerships with certain individual companies. For example, at Xero, we had a specific one with Xero in Zambia, where we have our own winter school with the company. And they take other kids that they took in agricultural school at Itamaru State, Xero. Others are at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. So we do have a good case. It's not just that we just throw waste there and say skills development. And we monitor it because we are also physically there during the winter school. We don't just keep company. We also go there in the officials of the department. And then you also raised the question of rural development versus elite before I go to the community department. You know, we have found that there's actually a very thin line between the two. Because if you go into a rural area where mining is happening, and then you start talking rural development, what are you doing actually? You know, as we establish these business enterprises within these communities, these income generating projects and infrastructure projects, you're basically growing the economy, you know, it's the local economic development of that area. So there is that thin line between the two. But obviously, as I said, our guiding principle or framework has been that of IPT. So that at least you ensure that there's no duplication but continuity and for the people in those areas. And then you talk about the rural development department. Obviously members would know that this is a newly created department and this charter is 5 years old. All that would need to happen for us to align ourselves. Go to them and say, here is the charter, it's been there for years. What are your programs? This is our program and these are the intentions with the charter. How do we form the partnership and then we proceed with the And then you also raised the question of the external versus the internal assessment. I think I didn't clarify that point because I hear it kept on coming. I referred to the MPRDA having been new, completely different from what we had in the past. And that by its very nature, for example, I'll make one example. In the Minerals Act, there was no distinction in terms of the extent of the area if you're applying for a mining permit or a mining right. A person could just even draw by hand a test plan and submit and say, I'm applying here for sand or coal. Whereas with the MPRDA, we place specific regulations where we say, if you're applying for a mining permit, your area for a mining permit shall not be bigger than 1.5 hectares. And a mining right, anything above 1.5 hectares. And that calls for us then having a systematic approach to that, where we need to have coordinated test plans that would actually demarcate the area that the person is applying for. So it calls for us then having certain systems in-house. So the internal assessment is more focused on our own systems, our own internal systems for implementing the MPRDA. It's not that there is a duplication. We're looking more towards us, that we've had these tools, we have a GIS system, is it still serving or do we need to upgrade it so that we bring in, for example, we're talking about even having, if you've seen this thing that they call Google X, where you just go into a computer and you can see a chart digging somewhere in some mine there. Something like that. We're looking at those things. Do we need to keep up our systems to that level? Where if I don't go out for inspection, I can actually see from the office what is happening out there in the library area. So there is that distinction between the two processes that are happening. Google Earth. Yeah. and it's not that, I also heard you ask the same question, then. It's not that there will be a gap, but they will complement each other. Because this one will be saying industry, and this one will be saying the department. How do we then bring the two together to strengthen our delivery for Congress? Then there was a question on outsourcing compliance. I think it was you saying. You felt that consultants might distort the reality on the ground. My response to that would be, you know, it wouldn't be easy for them to do this. Because, as I said, from time to time we do such a compliance inspection. Where we sample, we take a sample of company. Have provinces, where we then go and assess thoroughly a company. What they are doing covering a broader spectrum. But you would have those checks and balances and those you are able to compare that. Okay, our own assessment, where when we did a charter compliance inspection 3, 4, 6 months ago with company X, reviewed that. You can't have then the consultant giving you something going completely opposite direction. Then that would raise alarm for us, you know. Then the question on the roadshow, it's ready to, you don't necessarily need to have a strategy in place. It's just a question of how you sell your policy, if you amended your policy. Because the fact of the matter is, if you change a law or you change law, people get scared. If SARS were to say they are amending their law today, I'm sure all of us here would be very eager to know what SARS is now saying. When what the banking thing that saved the country came, when SICA came, we were all mad. You know, the same thing applies in business. When they hear that you're reviewing a charter or you're reviewing or amending a law, they shake a bit. So it's just to go to investors and build that investor confidence. To say, no, this is a provision, not what they think. Just like Rika is hearing the living daylight out of us now. But yeah, we shall comply with Rika and we do what we have to. And then there was a question on the funding models. I think it was from you, sir. We are not, again, at this point in a position to say which model has been the best, which has not been the best. It's what the assessment will give to us at the end of October. Because we've had cases, as I said, where we encouraged or negotiated with companies to use vendor financing for communities and women groups and especially as you say. But there are companies who have just used the bank group, you know, and they started others, started a 7-year funding deal, others 10, 12. So this is what we're saying, the assessment will be due to us, and then we'll be able to sit down and say, of all these models, which one makes more sense for the intended beneficiary in this whole, in the broader scheme of things. It would be premature for us to say now which one is or which one is. And then there was also, then I think it was you, so you raised the question on capacity. It's not a question of capacity. I wouldn't say we need to be saying to you the only capacity, as you said. But rather to say, you we needed to have this independent assessment. As I'm saying, the one we're doing inside is looking inward at us. And then we needed to have this which says, this is how the industry is doing out there. This is how things stand. You have these targets, you are not there. Or you have these targets, you exceeded your target. Or you are just on target. Or strengthen here, this is the type of thing. And then you also moved on to mention issues like in the Northern Cape, there is non-compliance known out there. These companies come and dig and leave holes and off they go. Let me just explain this. The MPRCA, when it was promulgated, not what the basic back of the Act there is where you find transitional arrangements. Where the government says, you can't just be rough with people where they have been. We call them old order management. Where a person has this license for the past 15 years, and here you come in 2004, you just take it away and it's not. We said we're putting in place transitional arrangements, and it was 2 years for prospective rights. If you had a prospective right in 2004, you were given 2 years to convert it into a new order perspective. If you had a license to mine in 2004, you had 5 years to convert it to a new one. So all those homes that you see there are the old ones, in terms of the old law. Legally speaking, until their rights are converted into new order mining rights as per the MPRCA, they have no legal, there is no legal obligation on them to do these things that I'm presenting here that are there in the past. Okay? And what has happened is that over the past 5 years, the bulk, coming back to your question again, Babungo, the bulk of the applications we have received have been for prospecting. I know that people see mining happening. quite a lot, you know. But if you on a scale of things, you find that you receive more prospecting, right applications than mining rights. The ones that you can see in operating are the old order mining rights holders. And we are now seeing a trend where people are now, because this expense, the maximum period that you can grant is a prospecting right is 5 years. So if a person is holding this prospecting right from 2004 to 2009, you can't really force him to convert it to a mining right. But we are seeing that trend where now people have prospected, they've got the results, they've got the capabilities, they are now translating them into mining rights. And then you will see this growth again, the graph going up on the side of mining, and then big change on the data implementation in the current process. And then you also raised the question of investor confidence. What would scare investors? I think I've explained that. What would scare investors is what scared us when the bank introduced that thing that wants to be utility bill and all this. If you're spending loss, people get scared. And it's our duty, it's our responsibility to ensure that we keep building that investor confidence in the industry so that there are no fears out there. Like when the MPRDA was promulgated, there was this wave that went out that the government in South Africa is going to take your rights away. When we actually had this transitional period of 5 years that has affected. So again, the then minister had to go on these roadshows to build that investor confidence. That no, don't disinvest in South Africa. We're not just taking away what you have abruptly like that. We're giving you 5 years to work towards, to adapt and work towards being compliant with the new. So there was just about that. And then there was also a question that you raised about, and just been reminded here, whether the terms of reference are still relevant. That question is not posed to you. It's what we are saying we are currently doing, you know, and we're saying that's the one area that we're going to need to put our energies on, because it's going to decide and determine the future of the industry going forward. Because if we were to discuss in the old terms of reference that are no longer relevant, that would be good for us.
The project that those miners are helping us in the rural area. But still speaking, there are a lot of projects. I can go from the green area where there are mines, but our people are suffering. Maybe if you can just check, I don't know what they do, if maybe the those miners can help, because what they're doing. One other thing that they are doing is that the government, they keep on driving the road area. But those men are too with big trucks and damage the road for their own benefit. I'm only worried about the money. Thank you.
I'm sure because they are talking about the whole the second issue that the chief director talked about, mining rights and attendance, is the issue of turnaround time. You know, we are provincial state, so the issue of the process of application, the requirement, taking a social labor plan, taking a prospective research. Are these things really affecting the people in the world? And engaging some assistance. For instance, if you require a certain amount of certain people, the group in a community, let's say you're all ready for either for social labor plan or with one financial statement or a right or whatever. Is the department then researching making it a little bit simpler? I'm not saying that it's difficult, but a little bit simpler for the community to enter my see the challenge. I'm sure now we have to engage with people who have had this experience to try to mine. But there is a requirement to capture. Another question would be the issue of vendor funding or vendor financing. I've seen other companies where if you come here with BE, they'll say, hey, mining requires a lot of money, doesn't require 50 million. Requires 50 million. Then the very same company will say, now you have BE, that money will advance you with 50 million, 100 million. Then you become a partner. I have seen this company being trained and tired because it takes time, even if the rate is lower. But they sort of work for this company, so they've got to retain this amount first. And then the company that possibly then it has met all the requirements. You know, how better can the department do in terms of
I think this is something that came to my mind. In a northern cave next to the Vaal River in Smidgen, there are two companies mining there for diamonds. This is where the fact. And they said there are diamonds. We were there at the Vaal Provincial Week as the delegate of the Northern Cape, permanent delegate of the Northern Cape. There was some question to the community rate concerning those mines. And we as members and even the MPL couldn't even answer those questions. Now I would just like to put this question to the Chief Director of this way. Is it possible for you to find out are the community benefiting from those two mines that are there? Are the community shareholders from those two mines? Were the community consulted concerning what you just said now? When there's mining license or they consult with the local authorities and then they go to the communities and all that. The question that was raised that day, it's about a month ago when we were on our provincial meeting. The question that has been raised there seems to me that the community were never consulted concerning those issues. So I'm just putting this question to you, specifically to those two mines in the Northern Cape, next to the Vaal River in Switzerland. If you come from the Afternoon Area Problems Group, you pass, the tower goes between those two mines, one on the left, one on the right. It's about 79 changes from Kimberley. So I don't know the names of the company. If it's possible for you to find out, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. My minister might not be directly a point. Not as the other kind of exploring or prospecting along the way. And then for the media. You find that these companies are prospecting for oil. the revenue law from time to time has a credit incentive to not to pay investors. We give them up to 100%. Rebate on their check, it is a good perspective. Now, what's the rationale of the, because the dealers can, you know, that they're not going to have the property for the past 6 years. Now, what's the rationale of the, you know, trying to money and money that they do for the past 6 years? And they pay them for 100%. Well, you know, that's the money for the interest. But the money you are putting, I like to use this money to empower. Wake up in the night
And unfortunately for me, Limpopo is one province I've never been exposed to. I've been exposed to all of them, except Northwest and Limpopo. But what I will say is, I will take this to my counterpart in Limpopo. I'll definitely engage the regional manager of the Limpopo office, you know, so they can. I can even give you the numbers for our office, so that before children give the specific area, you can hold them for inspection and see this particular line and offer the issue. And I think this response applies to this person as well. Because you don't even know the name of the mine, it's going to be difficult for me to even tell my colleague in Northern Cape. Because you need to know where he's going to go for this inspection. But I think we can give you numbers of the office.
It's just that change from Kimber, though.
Yeah. The Northern colleague. What we'll do is we will have a meeting with the regional, all the regional managers of the province. So then they can come to here. You can just see the rest of one man. There will be a meeting with the Kelak and one man who will be called to come and read the province. As you know, the NCOP are constituted mostly of province. As a fact, we get an oversight of not inviting them also to this.
I think it would be
nice
to thank you. So they also come to test, they know where this specific problem, so that they come to test. And Dr. Metz raised a question about the review being communicated once completed. Obviously, through the right channel, it will be communicated. And then he also raised the need about turnaround times and processing for applications. You know, a mining permit and a prospecting right has a time frame of 6 months. If you lodge an application today, we guarantee you your right will exceed your right in 6 months. I know whenever we say this, people say, oh, that's too long. What do you sit and do? You know? Not like we receive this document and we pack it somewhere and sit and relax, you know, and stretch our feet. These things are here in the head. It's the environmental part of it. Because what the law says, it says if I receive your application today, I must take it for completeness, the basic 26th, and within 14 days, I must inform you in writing whether we are accepting or rejecting. In that letter says that we then give you 30 days to go and consult the landowner or the supplier. And bring the document. And then you say, we give you 60 days to go and do the environmental impact study. Can you see, it's now 3 months already, and that's not our process in the department. Then you submit the document, the environmental management program, which tells us how are you going to manage the environment. And then the law further says, when I receive that document, I must circulate it to other state departments affected for comments. For example, those the water pollution issues, I have to circulate the document to the Department of Water Affairs so that they comment. If it's a high risk, they recommend that you reduce the site. Circulate it to environmental affairs and so forth and so forth, and the municipalities for resolving and development and comments. So can you see, it's a 5 months is this process that has to happen, and then we have only 1 month to finalize the administration and get our. And I truly do not see how we can continue it better. Otherwise, then you have issues with environmentalists on the site, where they say proper environmental studies were not done and proper consultation with the relevant authorities were not done. Really, for us, that's the most reasonable time that lawyers say that we can ever put in the law. And then you also spoke about the requirement, especially for easy access for communities and small business people. That is why we had to build into the act the mining permit zone. Because the mining permit requirements are the easiest. You don't need to pay a specialist to assist the people file the application. We actually didn't assist ourselves inside the office. If the community comes, we assist and take them through the application process. So the mining permit is really, you don't have to submit a social and labor plan, you don't have to submit a mining work program, which is a very technical, significant document. You know, it was designed specifically for new entrants, especially communities and issues. You also spoke about financing work permit. That again is one of the things that will come out of the assessment, which will show to us that the deals that we have so far are payable over this time, and it's really difficult for the HBSA that we're promoting in the industry, and then we'll be able to say going forward how to improve it. But one good thing I must say with vendor financing is that the company takes the risk. It's not the HBSA which takes the risk. You are sort of cushioned by the company because they vendor finance you. And then we've addressed that question. Prospecting for oil and tax rebates. We're not pumping money into multinationals. When they grow, they sink their own money into the ground and they pay tax to them. And then they do tax gains. Yes, it's not like the state is giving them money. It's a tax rebate, as the name says. And I don't know, as you said, the rationale, it's stuck in the Department of Finance, you know. But it's, as I'm saying, it's not necessarily that the country is passing money or giving money. But my own thoughts around it has always been, it was to encourage them coming with their technology to help us identify where the reserves are. Because it's a lot of money which we can't afford. It's just like prospecting for coal, diamonds, gold, whatever. It's so expensive. If you apply for a prospecting right, you get given a right. All you do is sink money in the ground. You don't know what's there. If you find there's something, comes up for you, but it happens that you find there's nothing there when you already sunk millions, and that money doesn't come back. You see? It just doesn't come back.
The fact is that we know there's no oil along the coast. And the question was, why is there to get a visit? No, for 4 years, we have to pay today.
You see, my theology and your theology, Mabungo, are a bit different. My theology tells me there is a zero point. That is why you have that today to tell. Where we have it, and that is why you have, what do we have today? Not yet, you know. And one thing, yeah, you see this age gap between the two. one thing now, on a serious note, one thing that has happened over here, the same with mine with Mindog. Processing and mining better, and that is why you find that most mines that were closed some years ago are now going to be recommissioned because technologies have improved, you know. You would find that back then, that conclusion was drawn that there is no oil. But it was actually the technology that was used then, you know. But the technology has improved so much that as they go back into these areas, they discover that they are with them. It's just like that. There are areas where we've had forever when I was in varsity, that in these areas there is no gas, there is nothing, but gas has been discovered. There's gas all over Mpumalanga, there's gas all over Western Cape, you know. It's just a question of technology. improving with time.
Oh, I'm not showing the way. Because the divine mind, they are really showing the way. Mm-hmm. You know, but to close the mind, they is so both there. That's why in fact the legal mind is going down there, trying to bring technology.
That's the unfortunate time.
But the fact is to wake up and get and invest in technology. And the mind algorithm of South Africa, they should invest in technology.
I'm sure the Honorable Chairperson knows that the department cannot do this. And the issue with the Zamazama is that's an unfortunate one. But yeah, technology is improving, and as it improves, we discover new things. There was a question about Daum. I think it should be addressed in the same way as that one. But now you start speaking specifics that I don't know about. And I think it's more regulation and monitoring other than policy and the policy. Just lastly on this, I don't want to, you know, belabor this point very much. But that's one comment for me on this capacity to regulate it. You know, you made a very interesting comment where you say that then it means the department for everything they want to do without taking. That is all these laws, precious metals, the regulator, diamond, we do these things and the regulation. Beneficiation, the job that we are going to talk to you about. It's not like we just throw, you know, less money around and in fact, we've always prided ourselves as a department that we are the least spending department in the country. Because even extremely technical issues that need to be addressed out there in the mind, we rather use our SOEs, like CCS and so that is not correct. Most of the things we do in-house, I must say, the department is a highly skilled and scarce-skilled department, and we do have quite competent with the staff in the department. Thank you.
Remember, this is the last round of questions. So, everything's in the process from the member side?
Madam, on this page, I don't know what the first letter is. Pages are not numbered. There's the outside cover, and then after the outside cover, we find 1, 2, and then 3, 4. The address here is background. The statement here says the mining sector in South Africa was in the past used as a tool to perpetuate the social economic inequality in favor of the selected group. This is what the statement is saying. To perpetuate social economic inequality. Now, if you could make us understand how this has changed in the past 15 years. Because we first did the mining charter, which was supposed to be the basis for the 18 equity among all stakeholders. So the spirit and the letter of this mining charter is attempted to ensure that the partnership between those full mind and the community surrounding the mining area. Now, my colleague there has mentioned the issue of consultation, because the process that you have outlined, that in terms of the act, whichever prospective owner that applies has to consult with the community, and the community must be able to have the guarantee in the process. Now, I would like to understand whether it is possible for some of the applicants to bypass the community and present the type of report, for instance, in areas like KwaZulu-Natal or Limpopo or the Northwest, where there are traditional leaders. You would easily bypass the traditional leaders and organize some short circuit and provide that type of support. Do you have instances where that is happening? And then, secondly, in terms of the successes that you are talking about, in page, I don't know, could be page 5. Here we say the mining charter target should be informed, in particular, by the success story and achievement as dictated by these six elements. Ownership and problems. Now, in terms of the success story, what percentage of ownership lies in the hands of the government? Because you said initially that there were these stereotypes where it was a lot of people. Now, I'm saying this because there are talks of transformation, you know, in the mining sector. And people are talking empowerment, people are talking nationalization. So, you are the architecture of the labor within this country to ensure that the partnership becomes something that is complex, substantial, and people are able to strengthen. So you probably have information as to the drive with the team. Now, one other issue that I would like to understand is mostly in terms of communities who have been informed, communities who have been informed that their own area has whatever the body of minerals. I'm not sure what intervention that the department put into motion in order to those communities in terms of the medical education. The other issue that I would like to understand is with respect to the initial, I'm not sure if it is still the upfront levy for environmental rehabilitation, which used to be a levy that all prospective applicants were able to forward to the department for whatever agency. Whether that is still applicable and how much it is. I apologize, Ramo for arriving late. Because we might have dealt with some of these issues. But the issue that I want to put to the fore is, if you see, when the committee went for the letter to do oversight, you see those members of the community going to a mine that is closed, and the mine that is relevant to them. They are putting their lives at stake, and they stand for in a very important way. That is very important. These people are very hungry for work. And this world is where they start. And they want to get access to this world. I'm looking at the statement here. The very last one at the end. A drop of water creates a rock through continuous politics. You can't tell an illegal miner to wait and tell him that a drop of water. One day, in centuries to come, it's a rock. So it is the question of the initiative from the partner to ensure that our own people are good. I know I asked a number of questions that you have. Thank you.
Okay. After about 8 questions, but I think for the interest of time, I will leave that until we get the problem for the But just the one thing about the old children in Vietnam. I know where this as a country, maybe the department feel that investors are skeptical about investing in mining products. But reading the report from research on streaming media in the other day, it was said that in actual fact, this is a problem to mining. And wherever the president goes, recent talks now with Brazil and recent talks with Angola, the minister also went to Australia. It's quite interesting, keen interest of big companies, mining companies, overseas, small mines, to come and invest in South Africa in terms of in the mining, even after they hearing news that mines should be nationalized, that people are talking. In actual fact, what the Greener report was saying that the nationalization of mines, they know they can be stuck of the product. Now that's a debate for another day. The other thing, the other question was that, now I can see that also for the regional director to come. Chief Director, would you say anything from the Minister? Would you like to add?
Thank you, Mr. President. The first question that you said is what has changed over the past 15 years?
Yeah, we can say comrade.
Based on Baba?
We can say comrade.
Okay, thank you. Let me start by saying when we talk the charter, we can't say 15 years or 25 years. Because the MPRCA was promulgated in 2004, so it's 5 years now. But again, you were correct to say that I probably had other most of the systems before we came. Like this one, our achievements over the past 5 years, part of the assessment that is going to be, and the outcome will be the end of the month, then we'll be in the process of how far we've gone, what is the achievement, where the challenge is, what we need to continue for the process. And then you also referred to the question of consultation with community. I must say that at this point, I know we've had quite a lot of issues regarding consultation. So what we've done is that in every state, we are currently amending the regulations to the Act so that we prescribe consultation in the regulations, so we can release it to the Act. Prescribe, define it firstly, what we mean by consultation, and then prescribe the way to conduct consultation and the scope of consultation. Then that area we are strengthening in the law through the regulation. You also asked a question about success stories. The success stories are also going to come out of the assessment process. You also said something about communities having been informed that they are deposits in their areas. I was very much interested to know who is this geologist that has done all the prospecting and goes around informing people. You see, this is a problem for
yes,
our community.
In an event.
It depends.
Where communities learn about prospecting.
It depends. For us, until a person has a prospecting report, you know, we know. These things happen where people are told things, you know, someone dreams and he decides to share the dream. Others come up with prophecies, you know. And unfortunately, mining isn't about that. It's about certainty. And it's a problem. That is why, in fact, the minister has planned that we are going to be doing roadshow visiting communities in the provinces, so that you get to explain these things to people. These things to them that you can't allow people to come in and just lie to you and say all sorts of things and make empty promises about the people. But in cases where they do have concrete information, like they have prospected before, then obviously they can come to the department, we take them through the application process, there will be officers, we have helped us in the region, and what people officers, we call them mineral law officers. They take them through the process, how to apply, what are the requirements and options. And then you raised the question about financial provision. You said it's a levy. It's not necessarily a levy for that equation. It's financial provision which we take upfront so that should a company disappear tomorrow, we then go and we have to take that levy and fix up the home. And then the second part of that question was that, is it still there? Yes, it's still there. And then they said, how much is it? It's not a fixed figure. It depends on the size of the mine, the actual type of disturbance. The environmental damage in an open cut mine will never be the same as an underground mine. It will never be the same for a coal mine and a gold mine. Never be the same for a small sand pit, 1.5 hectares, to a unique hardwood farm. So we calculate it based on, in fact, the criteria is based on a number of things, not just the extent, the size of the area. It's a lot of geological input that goes in, what is in the mining of power. It's a bit technical how you calculate the quality. But it's quite a lot of money in my sense. It is a lot of money. And we still do take that money up front. We go to that. And then you raised a question about illegal miners. That they are hungry, so they go there and see what they do. You know, a person who robbed a bank says he robbed a bank because he's hungry. Yeah? But the fact of the matter is that there's criminal activity. And the same applies with money. If you're mining illegally, it's illegal. That's a criminal act, and it has to be dealt with in that manner. But we have, for example, we've had in communities, rural communities, not talking about. You see that presentation that shows how much those people in the good state make per month. Others make 100,000 rand, 50,000 rand. It's like for them, they just want this quick money. But I tell you, if we were today going to go there and say, come, all of you are going to be employed, and you will earn 7,000 rand a month, which is like an average salary for an average person in South Africa, will they go? You know, they will think, hey, who does he think he is bringing people that just come and downgrade us to that level? But we've had cases in communities, particularly in rural areas, where they do not know that extracting sand without a mining permit is illegal. There you then go and you take them step by step, explain to them that this is illegal, you are not allowed to take sand. Even the traditional leaders, they think because I'm the leader, yes, if I give permission to this person, he can do. In such cases, then you take them, and hold them, and take them through the process, explain to them that this is illegal. But really, illegal mining is sure criminal act, and we have so many cases that we've opened with the police for illegal mining. Because that's what it is, basically. And then, to the third person, that question about roadshow. I think it's more of a precaution to say, people always think, once you say I'm assessing, I'm reviewing, they think, oh, we're going to make the requirements stringent, you know. Obviously, we'll gaze and see what's the trend, how are things going, you know, and then we need to end up on this.
Thank you very much. What I'm asking for from you to be able to understand this matter, I agree with you. We are all agreed there from together. That legal mind is true. Yeah, that's the problem. I want to paint a scenario to do of a ministry land affairs in the country, where they took land from those who were not using the land, and then they gave it to communities, and those communities were able to access funding development. Then they started funding. Now, 3 years along the line, the farm went down, and then the same minister who gave the fund to this labor, former fund labor of whoever, took the land from them under the basis that you don't use it, you lose it. Now I'm saying that is not how the farm is, because you are cutting power in power. If in the first instance the minister opens some agricultural policy to ensure that there is full-time training, there is both the theory and the practical to take them through, and then there is the funding from the government. It's a complete overhaul of the system. Now, with respect to mining, I'm saying again, that's not the thing doing more or less the same kind of stuff. If we have to empower our people, let's empower them in order to transform the relations of owners and those who reside in the midst of the world. Because you really don't want the community. One of the prospective miners, I mean, owners will take the community for a various food and bring them into the school so that you can take that further in the north. That is not enough. It's not enough. Because you are not changing the relation of communities in terms of. So I was just making that scenario to make sure that to establish an understanding that you need to be initiated. Come up with initiatives like the mining advisors who are able to take communities from one step to the other. That type of infrastructure is very, very key for the empowerment. It's very, very key. Because once you don't have that infrastructure, you're not going to be able to change the world. They will never be.
I thought there was more to comment than a question.
Alright.
Thank you very much, Chief Director. The other issues related to that relate to inviting. Because I am checking on time and we are 6 past the 6. But, 5. And I work 2 work. What's the question? So, if we meet later than 3, there won't be anybody except one of the chairman's here. So, we want to go over to the next presentation. Give you an indication about how long we need to be. Give you an indication how long we need to be for the next presentation. Unfortunately, you bring that a second step. We were shameful for the holding, but it was an unfortunate event that the secret of the development project was all chairpersons and brought to a meeting. We don't argue against the process. What I wanted to ask the members also, if we can put lunch back till 1:30, finish with this presentation with a question till about 1:30. We have lunch and then we go to Parliament. Is that fine with the members? Otherwise, we break at 1:00 and we come back at 1:30. And that's half an hour lunch. Some of us are sitting slowly. Mm-hmm. Food are sitting very slowly. Thank you once again, Chief Director, for the presentation. But it's not the last time. We will still see us before the end of the year. Because I think the committee likes you very much. The members of the committee like you very much, you know. They like to engage with you. So, but also, keep in mind that you're going to send an invitation to accompany us on KZS. We're going to run away from
so can I say that I have been replaced in Jesus? There is a name in Jesus.
All right, you know, give us that detail before you leave the race so that we can get in touch with you. Your name, surname, okay, you can leave the first and first name, just the name, and then you can
thank you very much, honorable members. Siyabonga Ndabezitha is my name. I'm Chief Director of Mineral Promotion from the Department of Mineral and Resources. Unfortunately, I've learned something from my sister regarding age. We do not, you know, disclose the age.
That's what they call the saving part.
Once more, many thanks, honorable members. The content of my discussion is going to be slightly different from my colleague's presentation, because what my colleague has done is to give you an indication
of what has been achieved in terms of implementing the objectives of the mind culture. What I've been talking about today is a strategy that is still in the making. In other words, we haven't, finalized, this strategy. So what I intend doing this morning is just to give you a high-level kind of presentation that talks about, our vision, our values, the philosophy behind the strategy itself, because it hasn't been finalized. Having said that, honorable members, I wish to preface my presentation with a few remarks underpinning the beneficiation strategy that we've been working on since late last year. I think this is necessary to help locate today's presentation within the broader context that has informed and influenced the evolution of the beneficiation strategy from the Department of Mineral Resources. I think the first remark that I would like to share with you is that beneficiation represents an attempt to translate our comparative advantage into our competitive advantage. We would like to use beneficiation to transform the economic landscape of this country. We do accept that our mandate is to regulate the minerals industry, but we also realize that the outcome of our regulatory function should make a meaningful contribution towards addressing the challenges of unemployment, poverty reduction, and of course, greater economic growth in our country. That, honorable members, is the philosophy behind our beneficiation practice. In terms of the vision that we are trying to articulate, I'm trying to articulate because really we haven't, finalized the strategy document. It's still in the making. So in terms of the broad vision, we would like to use the beneficiation of our minerals as an instrument to facilitate economic diversification. In other words, we would like to see beneficiation as one of the main drivers to diversify our economic activity. And secondly, as we are all aware, we still in this country export most of our minerals, in the form of raw materials. What happens is that we export them to the West. West beneficiate them, manufacture different types of products, which are then sold back to us at a higher price. It's something akin to the to the colonial, you know, a division of labor, where the colony were encouraged to produce what they did not consume and consume what they did not produce. So through this practice, we are saying we need to begin, you know, to change the legacy of the division of labor that has evolved over more than 100 years. So we would like to see the beneficiation helping us, you know, to progress towards a knowledge-based, you know, economy. In other words, we would like to see our beneficiation strategy helping us to move away from being an exporter of minerals as raw material to a situation where we are beneficiating most of our minerals in the country. Thirdly, we believe that if we beneficiate most of our minerals before we export them, that will help us to increase our GDP, because there will be more economic activity taking place in the country as a result of the beneficiation of our minerals. Lastly, we strongly believe that we need to use our beneficiation strategy as a means for creating opportunities for enterprise development. That, in a nutshell, honorable members, attempt to articulate our vision of the beneficiation strategy that is still in the making. The second major area that I would like to deal with relates to the strategic path that we have taken as a department in our effort efforts to come up with this noble strategy. Briefly, what we did as a department and also as a government also need, you know, to emphasize that, because I am sure that honorable members, you know, are aware that the Harvard economists that we're working with, the treasurer and the presidency, to initiate and, you know, implement ASGISA, had strongly discouraged us to go down the route of beneficiation. I'm not going to enter into a debate, you know, about that issue, because we also did our own independent, you know, research, you know, which led us to believe that what we are doing, that is beneficiation or encouraging, is in the best interest of our country. So we did our own research, you know, to look at different, you know, mineral producing, you know, countries, you know, look at Canada, we look at South America, we look, you know, in Nordic, you know, countries, to see how they've dealt with the issue of beneficiation. On the basis of our findings, well, of course, we have to make sure that, you know, what we're learning from other countries, you know, will be adapted, you know, to take into account our unique as a country. We felt that, yes, in some countries, you know, beneficiation may not work, but in South Africa, we would like it to work. And we'd like to give it a shot.
we decided to look at best practices, and on the basis of that, we came up with our draft beneficiation practices. What we did was to, as a department, because we had to initiate the process, and we're working closely with our state-owned enterprises, in particular MinTech and the Council for Geoscience, because they've done a lot of research, not in this area, but in a whole range of other areas that relate to mining. We put together our draft beneficiation strategy, and we invited stakeholders from the mining industry itself, as well as from other government departments. In particular, we worked with the National Treasurer, the Department of Trade and Industry, the Department of Science and Technology, and the President. All these departments are represented in our task team that is crafting the beneficiation strategy. There were a lot of debates within that task team, but we finally reached consensus that as a country we definitely do need to have a beneficiation strategy. We may not beneficiate all the minerals that we are mining in this country. We're mining about 53 different minerals in the country, but we agreed that while beneficiation of some minerals that are mined in the country may make a lot of economic sense. We came up with our first final draft, which was taken to cabinet, that was late last year. Cabinet gave a very, very informative and encouraging comments. The draft came back to us with a number of questions that we had to answer. We did our utmost best to answer all the questions that were posed. It went back to cabinet, and cabinet approved that we could release the document to the public as a discussion document. We were told that we were given permission to use the document as the basis for conducting further consultations with stakeholders in the industry and the members of the public. As a result of that, we as a department decided that we needed to officially launch our beneficiation strategy. That we did on the 30th of March. There was a big function in Midrand where we formally unveiled the beneficiation strategy, and we requested our stakeholders from the industry as well as members of the public to give us their comments. We received very, very encouraging comments. People were not particularly averse to the idea of beneficiating our minerals. Rather, they were very much concerned about the challenges that are likely to arise when we actually implement when we start beneficiating our minerals. One of the most common concerns that has been raised by our stakeholders relates to our energy supply. As we all know, beneficiation can be very, very energy intensive. and given the challenges that we have in the country with our energy, you know, supply, how do we deal with, you know, how do we deal with those tensions? On the one hand, as a government, we'd like to beneficiate as many minerals as we possibly can, you know? But we know that beneficiation is very, very energy intensive, you know. On the one hand. On the other hand, we know that we've got a challenge with our energy, you know, supply. Even though we are tending to it, but I mean, it's still there. So they're saying, how do we begin to manage, you know, the tensions between these two? So we found that that was a very, very constructive criticism. From the college, you know, but I was just raising the issue, saying, well, if you want to go down this, you know, it's fine, but you know, you must understand that these are the challenges, these are the constraints, you know, and we accept it. I would like them to go back and just, you know, because we did not, you know, sit down and decide as a Department of Mineral Resources that now we want to come up with a beneficiation practice. No, there are provisions for beneficiation in the MPRTA. My colleague is an expert on this, so but all I know is that, you know, Section 26 of the MPRTA, Minerals and Petroleum Resource Development Act, you know, does empower the minister to come up with a strategy to promote beneficiation of minerals in the country. And that's precisely what we are trying to do now. And of course, our beneficiation strategy is not only talking to the MPRPA, in particular Section 26. We are also talking to the National Industrial Policy Framework, because it does also encourage beneficiation of, though they talk about metals, you know, but it also encourages, you know, the beneficiation of minerals. So in a way, it also talks into that, you know, major policy framework of our country. We also know that, you know, we have what is called Diamond Act in this country, which is, you know, encouraging, you know, the beneficiation of our diamonds in the country. So it's not like, you know, this is something that, you know, just came from the Department of Mineral Resources. It's an initiative or a strategy that attempts, you know, to talk to quite a number of initiatives that are taking place in the country, so that we are able to deal with the challenges of unemployment, underdevelopment, and other social ills that are associated with poverty. We have decided that, and I need to emphasize here, honourable members, that I mean, these specific, you know, minerals that or commodities that we have identified as the basis for this strategy really do not in any way mean that we are prioritizing the beneficiation of these minerals. In as far as we are concerned, you know, any mineral that can be beneficiated, you know, economically in the country, it must be beneficiated. But we found that let's take these terms, because we know that there's been a lot, you know, going on even in the country, but you know, in other countries, and say, look here, what can we, you know, achieve if, you know, we beneficiate these specific commodities in the country? We came up with, you know, five distinct, you know, value chains. And as you can see, what my table does is to juxtapose, you know, the mineral and the opportunity of beneficiation that may arise, you know, from that particular commodity or mineral. If we were to beneficiate our, you know, platinum, there is a certain degree of beneficiation of platinum in the country, but we also know that, you know, it's useful for manufacturing auto catalysts and diesel particulate filters, you know. That's for the, motor industry. There's been some, you know, some activity taking place there, but we'd like to see more. if you look at, you know, at the
hybrid, the 35 was the previous type,
PGM, just platinum group metal.
Oh,
yes. And then this mineral we can use also for pigment production in making our paint. Gold, diamond, platinum group metal, that's the PGM, jewelry and diamond processing. There's a lot of, you know, activity taking place in the country right now, but obviously would like to see more happening in the country. Then we've got, you know, iron ore, chromium, manganese, vanadium, and nickel. We know what, you know, those are the raw materials for steel and stainless steel, you know, manufacturing. And we feel that, I mean, as a country, we have agreed to embark on a major infrastructure development over the next 5 years, which is probably going to cost in the region of 500, you know, billion rand, and that's a lot of money. We, as a department, strongly believe that because we import, you know, lots of, you know, input into these major infrastructural development, we feel that we could use that as an incentive, you know, to begin to say, let's produce these various inputs locally, because we are fortunate in the sense that we are endowed with a broad range of minerals. Again, coal and uranium, what is called energy minerals. We know that, you know, I mean, Eskom uses a lot of, you know, about 50% or so of the coal that we mine in this country is used to help Eskom to generate electricity. So we feel that, you know, there's more that can be done, you know, to make sure that these minerals are beneficiated locally for the benefit for our economy. You also know that, you know, got a very, very sophisticated, you know, technology that is used to manufacture, you know, fuel and coal. So we would like to encourage all those initiatives in the country. But as you all know, honorable members, you just don't, you know, wake up in the morning and say we're going to, I mean, beneficiate this mineral. You need, you know, skills, you know, very, very sophisticated skills. We as a country need to invest, you know, a lot in research and development so that we can come up with a technology to help us to, I mean, to beneficiate our minerals. In conclusion, honorable members, I would like to state that we are of the view that beneficiation will help us as a country to mitigate the adverse impact of commodity price fluctuation, and we believe that for our beneficiation strategy to be successful in achieving the desired effect, it is important that we work in partnership with the other departments. As I indicated, science and technology, trade and industry, treasury, and our staff. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson. members, the volunteer of course, I'm not from the weather, not from Guni,
but I'm not deciding.
Oh, DMD is not DMR.
Yeah.
Our apologies for using the old logo.
Well, another one is this is a new parliament, and I'm sure it's interesting to talk about it. We're all not part of the first parliament. So that the team about 10 years on that team to be engaged on that. Maybe we can test that. The other one would be what it is. I remember when we, I saw on TV on this issue of the even about the formation of the state and non-state of my Chimbari. I also heard that in the coalition as a way of beneficiation in the coalition of the country, there was some sort of reason that it was going to be created then. I just want to check how far that is with the coming up of the new airport, which is going to be a place where it's easy not to take things into other policies, not other countries. What about, as a form of beneficiation, the policy is happening? Let's uncover the first that one.
Thank you.
I think that is just the excess mechanism on the position point I have. On to the situation, so they really put it down.
Oh,
but the situation is not me. Generally, because it's textbook, they say that the theory says that you have to use your candidate endowment as a leverage to a political. And in our case, you know, more like in any case, the sense of government is not an innovation actually in political, or future that you have your nature. I can only find that from the discussion. How do you see the theory of liberty mind for endowment? Because uranium is a code, and we want to make sure that we can send the energy to the near surface, but then the mind is not so much. I think some of the things are very cool.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if you're going to have a question. But how far can we initiate our payment and now that we see the industry? We, like Iran is doing now, we said they are upgraded for not only for the industry, but for the community of the industry to find the local force and for new. How far can you go with the energy that we need for all the smelters that we need to be able to handle? And also, coal, on the other hand, we do have capital, which is not the point from coal. But how far can we go with the coal? Because we need to cover 2 feet from the coal. We need to be more slow. So we can use the interest to be more slow. How far can you go with the coal? And lastly, my feeling is that the sensitive commercial sector is sensitive to the
public. How many support one?
So,
how much more do you need to spend so that the all the skills for the how far do you have to go? How many years do you need to go? What are the things for this?
Yeah, I don't want to. I mean, all of us here, we understand that this situation is not at all unique. You had the end of World War, and then once that war completed, the English were content that when they meet the Afrikaners will show that whatever is posted here is dealt here, not go straight to the agreement. So I understand what you're saying when you say we export the wrong material. Now, I would like to know which country in particular, because I understand one of them is Israel, and we know what Israel is doing. And then I want to understand how are we to be able to. You have spoken about the infrastructure that is needed, and then you have said that within the next 5 years we are going to be investing between 50 or 500
billion. 500 billion.
More or
less. Yeah.
That's quite huge. And then if you explain that we don't have to. We are highly technical and which are required. Now, I know that these Western countries, whichever they are, which are protecting our minerals, they wouldn't want to have the type of partnership with us. That would say, on a yearly basis, pay for minerals. And rotate them in Europe and all the countries. You know, let us keep on refinement of the minerals. We have learned the hard way, I mean, as far as in the European Union, the Department of Trade and Industry. There was this huge struggle of open trade, you know, basically to try and keep away. That's right. So, now I'm saying the department do we contemplate something like a long-term strategic plan when it takes where you would have a buzzer to ensure that specific field in this area are actually funded by the department. Because you want to transform the relation and you want to make sure that the beneficiation that you're talking about, that you think requires highly technical skills that you don't have. That the long term strategic plan of 2026-2030 is going to take the country towards the independence. Yeah, no, my last question is right at the end. Right at the end. I'm seeing this beautiful thing. I don't know if you're from Taiwan or Hong Kong. Thank you. Thank you.
In the other end, process or the.
Thank you.
the first set of questions dealt with the draft strategic document that honorable members would have appreciated, you know, being given, you know, the draft. I did think of that, but I'll explain why I decided against bringing copies of that draft. I'm sure the honorable member is referring to the document that was released when we launched the strategy at the end of March. It has changed because the closing date for the submission from the public and the stakeholders was the 30th of June. So we sat down, we went through all the comments that we received, and we incorporated it. But in addition to that, we specifically went to the Department of Public Enterprise, the National Treasurer, Department of Trade and Industry, Department of Science and Technology. They were part of the HAP team, but we found that we also needed to consult with them individually because we are all going to be implementing this strategy. They gave us comments, and the closing date for their comments was the 30th of September. So we're still working, you know, those comments into our draft, you know, strategy. We will be coming to you once we are done with our strategy document to give you a full, you know, presentation on what the strategy is all about and how it will be implemented. So you will be getting a strategy document, just that we did not want to give honorable members a dated document. With regards to polishing and cutting of diamonds, I'm sure honorable members are aware that most of the small polishers and cutters, initially there's a challenge of accessing the rough diamonds that they are going to polish and cut. Diamonds are globally traded, you know, commodity. And they, I mean, the producers will tell you that, well, you can get it, you know, anywhere. And there were difficulties. I don't want, you know, to start explaining, you know, those difficulties. But we're all aware that, you know, the small polishers and cutters, they had problems of access. And what the department did was to come up with, you know, the diamond trader. In terms of the arrangement, we are supposed to buy 10% of what is produced in the country and then use that, you know, to ensure that our small producers have access. I mean, that's their raw material. So we are working on that. I think the model needs to be refined here and there, but at least we're trying to make sure that there is access, you know, to polishing and cutting. Honorable member, I am not sure whether I remember that at some stage we were talking about a cluster here in Johannesburg. International OR Summit, international. I really would not lie and say I know something about what's happening, but I can try and find out what exactly is going on. May I proceed to the second set of questions about how far can we beneficiate our meridian? Second question dealing with carbon emissions, and thirdly, how much do we need to do in terms of spending, you know, in terms of spending in R&D to promote beneficiation in the country. And let me start with this one because I think it's easy. Currently, we are spending about 1% of our GDP on R&D. I'm talking about all the science countries. It's about 1%, you know, on R&D. Developed countries are spending about 5% of their GDP on R&D. So if we want to catch up, we still have a long way to go. But I must also emphasize that about 4 years ago, it was really 0.something. So there's been, you know, some improvement, you know, especially with the establishment of the Department of Science and Technology, you know, then our allocation for research and development in the country, you know, started, you know, to pick up. So it's somewhere around about, you know, 1% now. But we definitely need more than that. And I'm sure the honorable members, you know, can help us, you know, to make sure that when the national treasurer does, you know, his thing, he doesn't forget that there's R&D, because we need that to support our beneficiation strategy. Carbon emissions, and, you know, SASO, and of course, you know, including, you know, ESCO. This is what is called, you know, dirty, you know, energy, because of the emission. Yeah? It's a particularly difficult, you know, question to answer, because we all know that, you know, these, you know, emissions are detrimental to our health. There is no doubt, you know, the pollution, you know, of the, there's no doubt about the negative impact of these, you know, emissions on our health, you know. But on the other hand, we do need to grow our economy. And currently, this is the most, maybe this is the cheapest, you know, way of producing energy. But definitely, there are new technologies that have been invented over the past, you know, 5 years, you know, that could help, you know, reduce considerably the carbon emissions, you know. But the issue is that they're quite costly. So I'm not sure, but I mean, it is a good thing that we could keep this and we take this into consideration, because if we don't, then it means we are not, you know, promoting sustainable development, because the future generations, you know, would suffer because of the things that we are doing right now. But maybe I know that as a government, we have, you know, taken, you know, a position with the Kyoto Protocol, but as a developing country, we are not in a developed country. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to deal with the issue in a very, very strategic way. With regards to with regards to beneficiating our uranium, not for nuclear.
I think in the name, the basic issue here is that South Africa technology are not that advanced. We're not where other countries are. So it's not really, it wouldn't be a fair exercise to compare, you know, South Africa to where advanced countries. But obviously, a lot of research is going into this, you know. A lot of research. We have dedicated researchers on this project who engage in ongoing research to look at best practices, what are other countries doing, best models, the latest models, what is happening around us. We continuously watch the space as to what is happening, and as we do that, then that informs our policies, the direction that our policies take. So I guess it is in the case of millennium, based on the fact that we continue doing, it's going to inform our policy as we develop the standards, saying, go this way, not this way, nuclear, not nuclear, this way. But it's not a, how do I say this? Not exactly. It's your beneficiation. It sounds like beneficiating heavy minerals. You beneficiate for certainly your lower limits, your lowest limits would be your immediate budget at home. You know? And then you progress to your goal. So if you look and say, if I were to benefit, we were to beneficiate uranium today, beneficiate to what? What is the immediate market at home? What is the immediate market as it leaves the country? That type of a thing. And of course, the technology is there for which it will help you to be looking thoroughly and that one particular measure. Because remember, the strategy, the beneficiation strategy is broad. As Dr. Tanavista said, we have over 53 minerals mined in South Africa. So it's broad, it's all in the country. It's not just focusing on one mineral. Uranium is just but one. And as we continue with the research and developing our policy, then we begin to do the thinking specific. You know, for example, recently we had a session on chrome beneficiation and chromium, you know, because there you're getting a sense that there is that immediate need, there is where it's going to benefit the country in a big way immediately, you know, and as you develop technology, that goes with it. You always gauge and see which one would be less expensive but would give a bigger return. And you know, that type of a thing, there's a whole lot of variables that go into a policy decision in Russia.
As a part of the intervention for like science and technology has been to our universities in South Africa. Can I answer that now?
Yeah.
I'll just answer that.
I think this one is, I'm sure honorable members would know that the last wave on CBMR was that it was going to be too expensive. And a lot of work over the past almost 10 years, in fact more than 10 years, I was also feeling energy then, you know, working on CBMR flat out. But the bottom line, it came out to be too expensive. It would cost us money, that would cost us to build 10 fast track stations, you know. And then as a country, we had to weigh our options. You know, it came out very expensive. But for other uses, you know, that's why I'm saying technology development as we go on and on. Yes, they have been classified as strategic economic development. So that in essence says that they will be looking to attention in terms of more research being done.
Yeah, I think it's very important that these two commodities, you know, we've classified them as, you know, strategic commodities. Basically means that even if you mine it, you've got rights, you know, but you're setting restrictions. You're not going to take out, you know, everything out of the cup. May I proceed to the third set of questions about raw materials that we export to the Western country? Which countries do we export to? We export to the entire world. And we export different, you know, minerals to different, you know, countries. Fortunately, one of my directorates, that is mineral in economy, deals with this information on a regular basis. We receive on a monthly basis returns from all the mines in the country. We've got about 1,440 mines in the country. That mine of 53 different, you know, commodities, and we get, you know, statistics on production, you know, export, you know, destination of the commodities. Honorable, I can give you accurate, you know, information, but I wouldn't have it, like, you know, I know that we export, you know, to India and China, lots of coal, you know, Israel, they get lots of, you know, diamonds, you know, from us, and other minerals, US, you know, Canada. I can provide you an accurate, you know, report on what, you know, we export, you know, to which country, even in terms of the quantity. regarding the highly technical skills that we need, we've been talking about these, the challenges posed by, I wouldn't say lack of skill, but limited, you know, technical skills that we have in the country. And we are, as a department, of the view that sometimes we really do not use the diplomatic relations that we have with, you know, different countries to our own advantage. We've been arguing, or we're still arguing about that in the department, that now that there is a shift from political, you know, democracy to economic, political, you know, diplomacy to economic, you know, diplomacy, how do we make sure that, you know, we leverage, you know, that to our advantage, so that we're also able to make sure that, you know, that, you know, exchange of ideas regarding building the technical skills that we require in the country in order to not only advance beneficiation, but, you know, we need skills in a whole range of, you know, skills. But it is something that we've been thinking and, you know, talking about. The last question was about, you know, the strategic plan to help us to build or to provide batteries to help us to develop the skills that we require in order to promote our beneficiation agenda. Yes, honorable members, we are. About 2 weeks ago, I was very, very privileged to accompany our honorable minister to Mintec. Mintec is one of the state-owned enterprises that the report falls within mineral resources. We visited that organization. It is in located in Renfrew. It's unbelievable. It does state of the art, you know, research, which is not only designed, you know, to promote beneficiation, but a whole range of mineral, you know, related activities.
One thing that really fascinated us when we, I mean, the minister and myself when we went there, was they've developed a very, very interesting technology to recover iron ore. And the way it is sophisticated, because, I mean, the quality of the ore that we mine in the country now is not as good as, you know, it used to be about 50 years. So in order to be able to extract as much as we possibly can, we need to come up with very, very sophisticated, you know, technology. So they started working in this technology in 1994, and we all know research sometimes takes decades before it yields the desired result. We started in 1994, and in about 2005, they ran out of money. Then they tried, you know, the government was no longer, let me not say no longer willing, but was unable to fund. Then they decided to go out and find a partner from Australia. I think they needed about 80 million rand, you know, to take that research to its logical conclusion. And Australians, you know, provided them that funding, and they took the research to its logical conclusion. Now they have this technology. Now the challenge is, Australia, you know, put in about 80 million. I think the South Africans probably will put maybe more than, you know, 500 million. And because of that, that technology, in terms of the license to use that technology, they've got exclusive, you know, right, you know, to use the technology for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. No other country. I mean, this is some of the people, but the technology is excellent. It's first, you know, of its kind in this world, you know. So I'm just raising that word. I said, wow, very good to know that we're doing, you know, state of the art research in this country. The other point that I wanted to remark on is the battery that they provide. Again, I'm going to talk specifically about Mintek. This year, they told us that they are providing 100 batteries at undergraduate level, honors, masters, and PhD in order to begin, you know, to develop the kind of skills that we require in order to conduct research that supports our beneficiation activities. Yes, they do have partnership with universities. I know that they have partnership with the University of Limpopo, the University of Pretoria, the University of the Witwatersrand, the University of Stellenbosch, and Rhodes University with those five institutions. So I think, yeah, there is something that is going on in terms of beginning to say we need these skills in the country, and let's start, you know, investing so that in the future we'll be self-sufficient in terms of having the skills to help us to promote our beneficiation.
Thank you very much. Careful.
This question leads to your other colleagues that be careful when you go to the select committee. Those guys are screwed up. But thank you very much for sharing the very self-containing committee. I want to thank the pastor, the chief director there, as well as the chairman. Thank you very much for coming. I think we received an answer from the first. We apologize for the shortness of the but we've got the program. I believe we've got the program now. We're at the way for the program to be finalized. You know, you guys are fighting with your classic ethics. I'm just telling you. It's good more yet. But thank you very much for following us. That's what's not so. But the program, I don't think there will be much changes to the program. We will let you know in the following account. Thank you very much for that. Thank you. Thank you. I was just taking the cue from the DG that day.
Well, I told you that I was in the red car from the penalty. It's not funny. The two in this morning were finishing back in service. It's going to be worth 7 years.
Alright, not a problem. Everybody has been invited for lunch on the invitation of the Honor of Grace, the committee secretary. Thank you very much, Grace. You know, we would have been starving, but we can't eat uranium and chrome. but everybody has been invited to lunch downstairs at the restaurant. Thank you very much, people. Enjoy lunch and hope to see you next week, members. For tomorrow,
yeah.
Doctor, do you have a card at all?
Yes, sir, I do.
Thank you.
I'm afraid no.
Don't worry. I can get you also on the website.
Please.
Not a problem.